Hello and welcome to CIFAR Sounding. I'm your host, Simba Wiltz.
And I'm Asla Gonser.
CIFAR Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of the big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CIFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
You can find out more about us on our website at cflar.org.
We're also on social media. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/cflar and on Twitter at cflarbigcats.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/CFL Animal Reserve.
Our discussion on the life cycle of big cats concludes today as we talk about the third phase of life, geriatrics, and the challenges that come with end-of-life care.
So where are we in numbers of years when we get to the point where you need to start doing that, like changing their diet, and where you do start seeing loss of hearing, loss of eyesight, where they start this change to where they're actually becoming senior cats?
A senior cat, really, once you get past the age of about, I'd say, 10, then you really start having to look at the cats more as senior cats. Now, that doesn't mean that they're instantly old at that point. It just means that now the susceptibilities for a number of different things are going to go up. Primarily, the two biggest things that get big cats are going to be kidney concerns, as well as cancer. And in both cases, they are extraordinarily difficult to diagnose.
So what about in the wild? When a cat gets to be about 10 years old in the wild, no one's giving them supplements. No one's watching them to see that they're aging and trying to give them assistance. Is it just at that point a number of, just a matter of time at that point as to whether a predator is going to get them?
Right. Or, in the case of some cats, it's going to be humans. And in the case of other cats, it could be a misstep in a hunt. It could be an injury sustained in a hunt. All it takes is a wild hoof or a misplaced horn to gore a cat in the side or, take out a leg. And suddenly now they've got an injury that could be career ending.
And not something they can recover from by any means.
Right. And if they can't recover from that injury, at least enough to be able to provide for themselves, then it could be fatal.
Of course, cats in captivity do tend to live longer, as we've already mentioned. And that's been seen over and over again, that is the case for all different kinds of cats, even domestic cats. The ones that are inside domestic living in a house tend to live a lot longer than the ones that are outside living in cities or as stray cats, even in the woods, whatever the case may be. Same situation. The domestic house cats live a lot longer.
Yeah, the difference in lifespan is like the difference in lifespan at the turn of the 20th century as it is at the turn of the 21st century. Most people died due to infection back then. No penicillin, obviously. That would be a cause an infection that could kill even a child, could die due to that. Whereas now, cancer, heart disease, all of these debilitating conditions that come from organ systems running longer and sometimes harder than they might ordinarily. And arthritis is a reality for all species, and it's a reality for our cats, and it's caused us to have to make accommodations, which is a huge portion of trying to take care of aging cats, is how do you change their environment to make sure that you have appropriate accommodations for them to have a quality of life.
Yes, and I'm sure you've got some stories specifically about that, don't you? Because you, increasingly, the CIFAR cats are aging, the population is aging. So you've got more experience with that than most people would, obviously, because you do have a large population of tigers and lions that are aging.
We do, and it's quite possible that we have the largest population of aged tigers in the state of Florida. and are up there in terms of the whole country, in terms of the number of tigers that we have. In watching the cats age, there are certain behaviors and whatnot that they need to be able to continue to do. They need to still be able to forage. They need to still be able to sharpen their claws and take care of their foot pads doing so. They need to be able to get to height, and it becomes important for us to accommodate that, usually by putting in additional features into their enclosures, whether it be smaller claw logs, where instead of having the behemoth that take four or five people to bring in, it may only take two people to bring in a claw log for a cat now, because they may not spend as much time sharpening their claws as they did before. Installing steps so that cats that can't just jump straight up can now walk up steps so that they can get to higher ground is a very simple accommodation that tends to have a dramatic effect on their quality of life, because some of the cats that are arboreal or do like the elevated platforms don't want to have to jump up 4 feet in order to get up there, especially for those that are showing signs of obesity and weight as one of their elder signs.
That's a good point. So obviously you're doing accommodations to help them keep a quality of life as they age. But one of the other things that happens to at least domestic cats as they age is the inability to regulate their temperature as well. Extreme cold and extreme heat affects them, and they're much more sensitive to it than they would have been in the past. Does that also occur with the big cats?
It does to a large degree. Now, the tigers tend to do a lot better with this because they don't mind water. So a tiger will jump into water and help it regulate that temperature a lot better if they have the mobility to be able to get up and into a tub.
But again, you can put steps to get to it if you need to.
Precisely.
Okay.
However, when it comes to the cougars and whatnot, they don't oftentimes have that ability. And beyond not having that ability, as they get older, they don't do as much grooming. Or if they do further grooming, the slowing down of their gastrointestinal tract will cause increased frequency of hairballs, which can contribute to constipation.
Doesn't sound like much fun having big hairballs, to be honest.
Well, it'd be one thing if they were hairballs that you could cough up, but when they go through the intestinal tract, they form these incredibly tight knots, matted knots. Think like a solid mass of dreadlock.
Oh, boy.
That gets stuck in an intestinal tract that doesn't have the luxury of using gravity. Like our intestinal tract uses gravity to help push things down because we're upright. When you're horizontal, you don't have that luxury. So now the body has to force it to its terminal end.
So if that actually happens, that could be a life-ending situation there where you get some kind of huge mass that just can't be passed?
Yes, and when that happens, toxins obviously back up, and there is you'll see cats that will struggle tremendously. In fact, constipation is something that we are watching out for quite frequently. Any change in the character of stool, any change in the frequency, the locations. People think that we're just poop obsessed, but really, in many cases, it's the only way that we can tell if something's going on. And it goes even more so for cancer.
Poop obsessed for cancer? I'm not sure I understand the connection there.
Well, obsessed about observing the cats.
Okay.
When it comes to cancer in cats, they, generally speaking, will not show signs, even though the equivalent kind of cancer in humans would result in such extraordinary pain and extraordinary debility that people would never make it that far. The process, in many cases, a necropsy can be performed after a cat passes to determine what happened. And these are very important events when they take place because it gives us further information on how we can better treat cats in the future, and also perhaps some of the signs. But some of the earliest necropsies that we've done and seen have been astounding with the amount of cancer, where bodies have been just entirely riddled with cancer. And outside of the cat perhaps acting a little bit less willing to interact or not willing to eat, really, you would not know that it was as bad as it was.
And of course, in the wild, that would be of huge advantage to the cat, to not let you know that there's a problem.
Right. And perhaps, of course, we are at a significant disadvantage because we don't have the same breadth of senses that the cats have. We have seen where cats that have become ill have been tended to by their fellow cats, where they will watch over them, or they will be seen grooming each other more frequently. There may be some signs and symptoms that we simply cannot detect. It is known in human medicine that cancer has a particular scent. And anyone who has ever smelled cancer knows what that smell is. And it would be a scent that certainly would be able to be picked up by cats, even in a scent-rich environment. So perhaps they have some awareness of illness and diagnostic capability with their senses that we simply don't, or we use labs to try and circumvent.
So they may know before, well, what you're saying is the other cats know before the humans do that there's a problem with a particular cat.
It's very likely.
And does that help you in some cases define that there's a problem because you see that maybe one of the cats is tending to another a little more than usual? Does that give you a clue that maybe something's wrong?
Yes, it can sometimes be the cardinal clue.
Mm-hmm.
There are some cats that are more social workers than others.
Okay.
I think that's the best way to put it. And for those cats that are socially attuned, they can tell us a great deal about the nature of what's going on around with others, especially if there's some kind of proximity. Now, most of the cats are never going to be nose-to-nose with each other unless they have grown up together in that manner. But that certainly doesn't stop them from occasionally giving sign, and it's very hard to describe. It may be a certain attentiveness. It may be a certain quiet. It may be something that is communicated between those of us who have walked with them for many years to be able to tell that something is up. And then it falls to us as the thinking humans to try and figure out, what is it that this cat is trying to tell me?
Well, you're in a unique situation because you actually do, at least for most of your cats, know exactly how old they are. You know, you know when they were born. The other side of that is for researchers that are in the wild trying to look at cats and look at animals in general and trying to age them. It's very, very difficult because they don't have that connection to exactly know when they were born. In many cases, they can't get close enough to examine them other than from a distance or from, you know, external quick looks or something. I know, for example, a lot of times when you're actually aging a wild animal, it's really after they've died. For example, one of the things that, you know, I was doing some research about aging, and one of the things that came up, the oldest animal that we know of is this 405-year-old clam, which, of course, we knew that because this clam had died and they counted the rings and they said, oh, it's 405 years old, because kind of like a tree, they make a little layer every year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the oldest mammal is this bowhead whale that they found, again, had died. And one of the ways they aged it is because they found a 100-year-old pin from a harpoon inside of this whale. So they knew it had to be at least 100 years old, but it was actually aged to be about 150 years old, which was, as I said, stated to be the oldest mammal. And of course, we know about tortoises that have lived a long life, and in most cases, we know about them because we have photographs and evidence of them being around for a long period of time. But when you look at something like, you know, in the wild, at a living animal like a big cat, they have to make assessments based on what they can do. You know, unless they can anesthetize the cat and do an x-ray to look at skeletal structure or actually, you know, look at their teeth, which I know, you know, a lot of cases you can age animals by their teeth. They really don't have anything but visual clues to go by. And you're in a unique situation because you know how old the cats are and you're seeing the visual clues and those other signals that might actually help people. The information you have may actually help people in the wild age the cats they're looking at running around in the wild, correct?
Yes, and we do know most of the cats' ages, but there are a few that we don't. And that makes for some very interesting guessing games. You know, you're really looking at cats and going, okay, how old is this cat? And you know, you can look at things like the fur length and the quality of the fur. But even that can be misleading because tigers have such remarkable variation between their fur color, where you could have some really, really rich russet colors and then some very deep blacks through the stripes and lighter colors in brown. There's so much variation that you really can't use that.
Do they gray? Do the cats gray?
If they are melanistic, then yes. In fact, our leopards are actually showing quite a few gray streaks through their fur as you look at them. But if a tiger grays, then you really can't tell. They may get a little bit coarser, perhaps. They're not the soft, fluffy fluff balls that they are when they're young, but they don't gray in the same way.
Actually, that's one thing that's true of domestic cats as well, that their fur will get more coarse and thin as they age. But of course, you have to, I'm assuming, touch the cat to know that, that you may not be able to see that from a distance if you're observing a cat, for example.
Yeah, if you're observing a cat, it'd be really tough to tell that. Although people can see luster, and cats' coats can look dull, and that dullness can be a nutritional issue. Or it could be just the sign of aging.
Well, one of the other things that I had seen was that one of the other ways that they age the cats is just how they move about. There is apparently some distinction on the way they walk a little more carefully when they're getting older.
Yes, and a lot of that is due to arthritic changes over the course of time. They are heavy animals, certainly, and that is a lot of weight to move around on those paws all the time. And certainly they'll have injuries over the course of time. They are a step beyond professional athletes. They are athletes for life. And living an athletic life can be very hard on a body, regardless of species.
Yeah, it'd be like being a football player all the time, huh?
Mm, pretty much.
That would be painful, I would imagine. But the other things that I had read about were muscle tone, that you can somehow look at a lion or tiger and see that the muscle tone isn't quite as structured as it would be with a younger cat. Their rumps are a little thinner. Their tail placement's a little different between their legs and hips. Do you notice any of those kind of things? Or
that one's a lot tougher in captivity because we have control over the diet. In the wild, if they have a famine or they have several unsuccessful hunts, then they can certainly look a lot older than they actually are. Cats in the wild, and actually in general, are graded from grade 1 all the way up to grade 8 based upon how much body fat that they have. Grade 1 being emaciated and very thin, where you can see articulating joints and everything, all the way up to grade 8, where you've got literally a layer of fat over the entire cat's body. And if you get an older cat that may have been a grade 8, grade 7, but has lost a lot of weight due to age, they may drop into that magic 3 to 4 range where they look fantastic, but they may have originally been a very chubby cat.
So it doesn't necessarily mean that that's a sign for aging, is what you're saying. It could be also, well, obviously illness is one other cause, but in that case, in the wild, it may just be a famine. They just haven't been able to find food lately.
pretty much. And it is very tough to age cats that you can't keep an eye on.
So not knowing that exact age or not knowing their history, just observing a cat makes it extremely difficult to age them. Obviously, once they pass away, there's all kinds of different studies and tests you can do as autopsy type stuff to know how old they were, but that isn't necessarily the goal when you're observing a wild cat.
Generally not. And, you know, the purpose of all of this knowledge of the life cycle and whatnot is in part so that we can do our best to understand the changes that will take place in our cats over time to adjust to create a quality of life for them in captivity. But also it does inform those people who are doing work in the wild to be able to say and see things that they perhaps may not have been able to see before based upon the experiences that we've had up close.
Well, for example, earlier you mentioned being poop obsessed. Can that be somewhat used in the wild to assess a cat, literally finding their poop and being somewhat understanding of what that means?
Well, if we in captivity are poop obsessed to try and make sure that we can tell about a cat's health, in the wild, they're even more poop obsessed because in some cases that may be the only thing that they find of a cat.
Particularly tigers that are very elusive, right?
Exactly. Especially if you've been seeking and searching for weeks on a time and not ever seen the cat, but you keep finding the spore, that's when you can tell a lot about that cat. What did it eat? What had it hunted? You know, everything comes from that particular piece. And the success and failure of an entire expedition can depend on how well that researcher can read poop.
That's a nice thought, reading poop. But it's obviously very true, too. So you can tell, in some cases, even the health of the cat just by reading the poop?
Yes. And, you know, scatology is obviously a lot more deep and difficult discussion than we can have right here. But it's an extremely important technique. It's one that the oldest of the human doctors that are out here might still recognize, because before we had a bunch of lab tests, we had to measure ins and outs.
You're talking about for humans as well?
For humans as well. And there were things that people could tell from that time.
See, if you told me scatology, I would think something musical, you know, scatting away. Obviously, that's not what we're talking about in this case. So when they do get to this age, when they're obviously much older and they're senior cats, in the case of the wild animals, we've already talked about that at that point, it's really more about if they can take care of themselves, if they can bring home the bacon to feed themselves, literally, to survive. But for the captive cats, obviously you're feeding them, you're taking care of them, and as much as you can, giving them a quality of life. But even so, even with cats that are in the wild, I mean, there's this whole concept of, for example, like for elephants, that they go off and they die somewhere on their own, solitary. Is there anything like that for big cats as well?
Not really. Because of the kind of life that big cats lead, they don't generally just go somewhere and give up.
Okay.
They go until they physically can't go anymore. An old, beat-up lion who's lost his pride and is injured from the fight will still be trying to run off buzzards to get a meal. An old tiger who is stumbling along the path will still be looking for that unsuspecting guar that is not paying attention. They will go on their instincts until nature finally doesn't give them the strength to move again. In captivity, it's a very different situation. This is where the captive situation bumps up against some of the most challenging situations that we face as humans together, because what is considered humane in cats is not necessarily considered ethical for humans. And the reasons and the depths behind that are probably worth a whole other discussion. But as stewards, we have a responsibility to try and make sure that the cats have an appropriate quality of life. And at the point when they no longer have that quality of life, then we have a responsibility of helping them cross over in a peaceful manner. And this is not a cold algorithm. We don't sit in the room with a chart that says, okay, they've passed this quality of life thing, so therefore now it's time to euthanize. It really depends heavily on the cat and when the cat is ready, because many times the cat will have made up its mind that it's tired and it's ready for whatever is coming next. The wild equivalent is when that lion, that tiger who has walked for miles and just can't catch a break, finally just lies down to rest because he's tired, and somewhere in that rest realizes he's just not going to get up again. And we've seen that. Cats will signal that to the humans when they have decided that it's, you know, I'm not interested in the toy, I'm not interested in the den, I'm not interested in the food. There's something beyond calling me, and I need your help to get there.
So they will at some point just lay down and be done with interaction with anything.
Right. And they may become exceptionally accepting, even. Whereas cats that have been aggressive their entire lives will suddenly be fine with a person giving them an exam, suddenly be fine with being contacted through the wire, or even suddenly be fine with someone walking up to them and cleaning off that matted piece of fur that they keep laying in and, you know, refusing to groom. It is one of the most challenging things that comes with this particular world. It is part of the game. It is part of the responsibility. And as cute as they start as cubs, there is a certain solemn respect that you have for a life well lived when you finally get to that end point and the cats are ready for you to help them to the next phase.
And obviously it's a very, very difficult decision for anyone to make, but particularly those of you that have worked around these cats for years and have become so close with them as to call them family. It is akin to having to make that decision for a family member that you have to allow them to pass on.
And in both of those cases, what you're really looking for is to be able to look back and say that not only did you do what was best for that family member, but also that the time that you shared was meaningful, and there's a recognition of that meaning in those final moments, and we become stewards of their memories at that point, and stewards of the lessons that they've left us, so that the next generation of cats can live that great life just as well as they did.
C4 Sounding is a production of Central Florida Animal Reserve,
where we engage the world of big cats through our mottos of compassion, conservation, and commitment.
At CFAR, when it comes to big cats, it's about vision.
Send us your thoughts. You can get us on email via contact@cflar.org.
Tune in again next week for more discussion. My name is Asla Gonser.
And I'm Simba Wiltz. Thanks for listening to CFAR Sounding.